Pot.
We present the dramatic story of our court, where daily the unbiased administration of justice is dealt to rich and poor alike. These dramatizations in fictionized form are typical of the human interest dramas that daily crowd our court. Tonight, the Hansom Cab Mystery.
Gentlemen of the jury, the administration of good government is based upon a sound judicial system. In considering the case before you, weigh carefully all the evidence and be convinced beyond all reasonable doubt of the guilt or innocence of the accused before delivering your verdict.
The People versus Helene Randolph Patterson.
In every modern city, many more murderers walk the streets unmolested than are ever brought to book by man-made laws. Some are apprehended, but outwit the law. This story, which you're about to hear, must be about one of those. It begins in the New York of 1905. How runs the American world then? In politics.
I urge that the good officers of President Theodore Roosevelt be accepted to end the Russian-Japanese war.
And in art and invention.
There has been perfected a method for preserving vegetables in bottles.
Well, well, the 1905 equivalent of the can. Such is progress. But what else is happening in this merry month of May? A sweet-scented musical about a perfumed island is running on Broadway called Floridora. And hansom cabs stand nicely at the stage doors with elegantly taped young blades, bunches of roses, top hats, mustaches, and choristers. Oh, and talking of hansom cabs, here's one trundling its way through Columbus Circle. Yes, here it comes as the Washington clock chimes now. Tip-top, tip-top, with a sprightly horse wagging his head in the crisp morning air. Until, as the horse is drawn to a stop by a startled cabby, the drama begins.
War there! War there! Lord mercy! What's going on? Hey, what's happened in my cab?
Peter, why did you do it? Heaven save him.
Lordy. Oh, yeah.
Need someone to help him quickly. A doctor.
So that's how it happened. As the crowd gathered about the fatal hansom cab, with its weeping woman emotionally clasping her hands, the cabbie dived hurriedly into a nearby drugstore and out rushed the chemist to aid the handsome young buckaroo who lay back against the cushion with bloodstains on his shirt front. But, we regret to state, the gentleman was beyond all aid. Then the presses of the time began to turn, and not far from the scene of the crime, a bright young reporter rushed into the editor's office of the New York Mercury.
See, I've a story for the front page. Lovely chorus girl with suicided lover.
Who's dead?
He's a young gay blade of the racetrack, bookmaker, gambler, and horseman. Rich, generous, and jovial, English as Eden, and now, dead as mutton.
Today, your correspondent, Ben Harding, brings you a first-hand account of a sensational trial of Elaine Randolph Patterson, indicted on a charge of slaying the man she loved. The courtroom is crowded, and Alex Young, brother of the deceased, is on the stand as witness for the people against this gorgeous chorus girl from the cast of Floridora. And gorgeous she is, in a great picture hat, her pale and lovely face discreetly veiled, as she sits in court by the side of her aged, white-haired old dad, listening to the testimony.
Mr. Young, did your brother ever tell you how he came to meet this actress?
Yes, Mr. District Attorney. Caesar did tell me.
Kindly inform the court using the words you spoke, as near as you can remember them.
Caesar went on a trip to California, leaving his wife in New York.
Yes.
Nanette stayed in New York. On the train to California, There were traveling members of a road show of the Floradora Company. And my brother happened to meet one of them named Helene Patterson.
I say, are you trying to get that door open?
Oh, yes. This is my compartment. I was just going to bed.
Oh, the beauty sleep, eh? Not that you need much of that. If you do allow me.
Oh, how easy it was. I'm so helpful.
Really? Oh, well. But I say, if you ever want anything, you just let me know. These are young, isn't it? I'm traveling in compartment 24.
Compartment 24?
24.
Right.
Oh, let's just say, I think it is.
What does that mean?
Till we meet again.
Oh.
So much for the testimony of the brother of the dead man. And from Mr. Alex Young's testimony, it seems that his brother was well and truly captivated by this lovely Floradora girl. This was true love, gentle readers. The fragrant romance which could never run smooth. For Caesar Young was married.
Did you remonstrate with your brother about this infatuation with the accused woman?
Accused woman? The lovely Helene shuddered and placed her hand on the arm of her white-haired old father. A touching gesture.
Yes. I spoke with my brother. That was after Nanette, his wife, had written to him, imploring him to come back to her, offering to forgive him entirely. The three of us had a talk in our house several days before Caesar's death.
Caesar, all I ask is if you come back to me.
I told you, Nanette, it's my wish also. But you must give me reasonable time to break it off with her left.
But why, Caesar? The woman's just a money sucker. You admit that you've paid her thousands of dollars.
Oh, really, Alex, there's no need to go into that.
But there is. She appears to have dozens of relatives, all of whom seem to be sharing in what you pay her. It's scandalous.
It's not fair to me, Caesar. My pride.
Oh, my darling, I'll do anything you say. But I must see her lady next day, and that's only fair.
Oh, then I insist on going with you, Caesar.
That's scarcely necessary, Alex.
Oh, yes, it is. This is not the first instance of your rakishness.
Alex, please.
Oh, Nanette, pride, Alex. You'll hurt her.
Then, all right, come with me and see her.
As a matter of fact, if the truth be told, I'll be pleased that it's free of the affair. She's begun to bore me.
The courtroom is spellbound as Mr. Alex Young proceeds. Outside are the crowded lobbies. A young girl is on trial, and everyone knows it. Your faithful chronicler sets down the story as he hears of a cab which calls for the beautiful Helene at the stage door, the touching smile she gives to the man she loves as he hands her in, then her frown as she sees his brother there. They go to Flannery's Saloon on West 125th Street in a private alcove, half curtain, with Mr. Alex Young within earshot.
Mr. Young, did your brother quarrel with Miss Patterson at Flannery's Saloon?
She quarreled with Caesar.
Describe what happened.
Caesar told her he must return to his wife.
Oh, look. I must be fair to you,
Nanette, what about me? I've given you my love, Caesar. You can't desert me now.
It's not a question of desertion. But I've promised my wife I'll sail with her tomorrow on this evening.
You'll never fail with her, Caesar.
Oh, my dear, don't make a scene.
I'll do what I please. Let me tell you, Caesar Young, I'm not going to let you walk out on me as easily as all that.
Now, look here, Elaine. You're just a
shelter. Don't you call me that again.
No, that's all you are, and I'll knock you down block off if you don't shut up. It's all over. Now, get back into your silly little head.
I won't let you leave me. Caesar.
Let go of me.
I won't forget that, Caesar.
Your correspondent reporting the fifth day of the trial of Helene Patterson. This morning, she is wearing another big picture hat and an orange gown. She has no veil. Her beautiful face is white. There's not a man on the jury who was not affected by the tragedy of that lovely visit. But this morning, someone else is on the stand. The wife, the widow, the woman wronged in this grievous crime of passion. Mrs. Caesar Young says,
The morning it happened, a few hours before we were due to sail on a ship, Caesar said he was going out.
Where did you say he was going?
He had to buy a new hat downtown and also get a shave.
I see. It may interest the court that Mr. Young was wearing the new hat and his face was shaven when he was found in the hansom cab. Go on, Mrs. Yellen.
I did not see my husband alive again.
Did your husband at any time prior to his leaving suggest he was going to see the accused person?
No. He told me he'd finished with her, that she was an avaricious and a common woman, and that he was glad I'd helped him break away from her bad influence.
Thank you, Mrs. Young. Your Honor, I crave leave to submit a demonstration to the court, an actual demonstration of how physically impossible it would have been for the dead man to have taken his own life. I ask the staff to bring in Exhibit G.
An actual demonstration takes place before the eyes of all as the district attorney has wheeled before the judiciary a skeleton. A grisly erection of human bones to serve as a model to convince the jury that Caesar Young did not take his own life.
Order! Order! He would have had to be a contortionist. A contortionist to shoot himself while sitting in the cab. The direction of the bullet, the powder mark, the very variety of the trigger action all point to one person firing that fatal shot. The woman in the cab. The one sitting facing Caesar Young. It was physically impossible for anyone to have fired that bullet except Helene Patterson. The people rest their case.
The state ends its prosecution, and all America waits for the testimony of the woman accused, the pale and handsome woman who is the center of this drama.
In a moment, we'll continue the Handsome Cab Mystery. But first, your announcer. We continue the case of the people of the state of New York versus Helene Randolph Patterson. Remember the time, almost half a century ago. Reports of the case blazed in the newspapers with pictures and lurid descriptions, all by special correspondents, of which our friend from the New York Mercury was no exception. From yellowing pages, the living word leaks out.
Today, crowds block the street outside the criminal court building, for today, Helene Patterson has taken the stand in her own defense. Her lips move, tears spring to her eyes. She makes an heroic effort to draw herself together, clasping and unclasping her soft white hands and turning wide and piteous eyes on the jury. And we can imagine the thoughts going on in the minds of the hard-bitten jury.
Poor girl.
My girl, I led on, led, of course.
Her defender is Counselor Levy, hero of 300 homicide cases, the humble Abraham.
Miss Patterson, we all know what an ordeal this trial is for you. But it is one of the great duties of our American system that when a person dies, even such a young profligate as the deceased, there must be an inquiry, rightly so, into his death. Now, my friend, the district attorney, through the brother of the dead man, has given us a version of a conversation you had with Caesar Young the evening before his death. Is that version correct?
Oh, no, no.
Oh. Then what actually did happen?
It's true we went to Flannery's saloon. It's true he said he could never see me again.
At no time did Mr. Young strike you?
No. He pushed me aside and rushed out of the cubicle. He was in a terrible state.
No doubt, no doubt. Poor fellow. Now, the next morning, Miss Patterson.
I was afraid for him. He was so upset. I took a cab to his house, hoping to just catch one last glimpse of him as he was leaving. Just a last farewell.
How human. How human.
He came out of the house and saw me in the cab. I called to him and he got into the cab and said he was going downtown. So he drove off. He looked so ill and strange.
Helene, why did you do this? You shouldn't have come, Maya.
I didn't expect to see you. Oh, my dear, how ill you look. Oh, I'm shaking.
I have to catch the birds at night. Helene, I don't know how I should do it. I can't let you go. I can't.
Please, go on, Miss Patterson. Painful as it is, be strong and go on.
I persuaded him to shave and buy a new hat. So that he would feel more careful.
And did he?
No. As the hour of 9 approached, he became very agitated. He declared his love for me again and again. I tried not to look at him. My own eyes were blinded with tears. I looked out of the window of the cab. Then as the clock chimed 9, I heard the shot. And Caesar fell forward onto my knees, a red stain on his forehead. And the gun fell from his hand to the floor.
What did you do? What did you say?
I don't know. I can't remember.
Did you say, Caesar, Caesar, why did you do it?
Yes, yes, I believe I did.
Your correspondent, readers, saw the bitter tears cascade from Elaine Patterson's violet eyes. Here was a woman, one might say, inexpressibly disturbed by the memory of a man driven desperate by the thought of parting from her. And her heart-rending cry, Caesar, Caesar, why did you do it? Today we listen to Abe Levy upon that very point in his address for the defense.
I appeal to you. Is there a possibility that within 2 seconds of the shot, she should have been so consummate an actress as to have been able deliberately to pretend the horror which showed itself on her face? Why, it passes your understanding as it does mine. My friend will tell you it was assumed. That cry, Caesar, Caesar, why did you do it, was assumed. Then, if it was so, this girl possesses ability never shown by the greatest artist who ever trod the board. You are all men of the world, my friend. You've seen this. This young girl testified. You cannot regard her as being guilty.
I am not impressed by learned counsel's histrionics. Even Mr. Levy himself has just given a convincing and emotional rendition of Caesar, Caesar, why did you do it? And he is certainly no Edwin Boo. Or any Salvin, either. It does not require the greatness of theatrical talent to pretend that something has happened which has not. What is the true interpretation of that phrase? Consider Caesar Young's companion in that handsome cab. One call is in her thoughts, and she hears it again and again. You've lost, Helen. You've lost. The mistress has lost her handsome, generous lover. Caesar is going back, Helen. Going back to the wife he had sworn before God to love, honor, and cherish. You've lost. Oh, if she had any doubts, they vanished then. She saw red. Anger flamed in her heart. To action. She shot and killed. A sound. Some smoke. A dead man prostrate on a woman's knees. And the wages of sin are paid.
Hello. Hello, I want the editor.
This is the editor, Harding. What's happening at that court?
Well, the jury's still deliberating, sir, and I really can't...
Court reconvened.
They're back. Although... I'll tell you, sir, as soon as I can get a verdict.
Hey, hey, hey. All those present, be silent for his honor.
Has the jury agreed upon a verdict?
No, Your Honor. The jury is unable to decide on the guilt or otherwise of the prisoner and ask that it be discharged.
Your Honor! Your Honor! On behalf of the state, I move that the case be heard again in retrial.
Readers will remember last November the sensational trial of Helene Randolph Patterson. In fact, who could forget the unforgettable when this pretty and winsome actress pleaded for her life before the bar of justice? The jury failed to agree on her guilt or her innocence. Now commences her retrial, and we have heard that District Attorney William Rand has uncovered sensational new evidence against the Floridora girl.
Your name is Gary Bushman, and you're a gunster.
Yes, sir. More or less, I'm a pole dresser.
On the 13th March, you identified two people as having entered your shop and purchased a pistol approximately 24 hours before Young's death.
Yes, sir.
Look carefully around this courtroom. From where you're sitting, can you see anyone you can identify as being the two people, a man and a woman, who purchased the pistol?
Yes, sir. I think that lady there, that gentleman in the Panama hat.
Stand up, James Scott Patterson, and his wife, Mona Patterson. These two people are relatives of the accused. Thank you, Mr. Bushman.
Don't go, Mr. Bushman. You identify these two people as having purchased the gun which killed Caesar Young. How do you identify them?
By their faces.
You have a good memory for faces?
All right.
Would you look carefully at the gentleman seated at the end of that row of forms? Him?
Yes.
Recognize him, huh?
No.
Would it surprise you to learn that he entered your shop 4 days ago and purchased a silver cigar case?
Cigar case? Cigar? Oh, yes, of course, now I remember.
Yes, I thought you would. Now. My friend, the previous jury failed to convict this courageous girl, who had gone through a tremendous ordeal in two trials. Yet, her story remains the same as it did in the beginning. It is useless my learned district attorney saying that Caesar Young could not have killed himself. He could delight the reporters and seek to confine you with a demonstration in court with a human skeleton. But that's as much play-acting as that of which he accuses Elaine Patterson. As for the recognition of two people supposed to have purchased the pistol, why wasn't it brought forward earlier? My learned friend will say it was because of the witness Bushman's illness for a long period. Look at the accused, gentlemen. Look at her. Does this charming example of American womanhood look like a murderess? Does she behave like one? Or is her demeanor that of a woman who has loved and being loved for her beauty and being made to suffer cruelly for it?
Your correspondent sees the trial through to its final dramatic conclusion. Outside the court, thousands of people block traffic and defy the police to move them. The courtroom is packed. The eyes of the nation is on the jury foreman after their night-long deliberation.
Hey, all those present be silent for his honor.
Has the jury agreed upon a verdict?
Your honor, the jury finds itself unable to agree upon a verdict, and there seems no possibility of its ever doing so.
The lovely girl rises in the court. Outside, the people are cheering as they hear the jury's verdict. Once again, a jury has failed to find Helene Randolph Patterson guilty.
So the story is ended, has become part of the past, just like the hansom cab in which it was born. No further indictment was filed against the pretty prisoner, and she walked freely from the court. Whether she was innocent or guilty, we will never really know. All we can be sure of is that she was pretty, and that her juries were susceptible. In a moment, we'll bring you further news of these real-life dramas of the courts. But first, your announcer.
Court is adjourned until next week.
Be listening next week, same time, same station, when we present another real-life story in Dramas of the Court. This feature is a Grace Gibson Radio production, written by Maxwell Dunn and produced by Reg Johnson.